This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antic. Last week, Selangor Menteri Besar Amiruddin Syari announced the Selangor State Budget 2019. And in it, he allocated $2.56 billion for this year, or rather next year, 2019. And it will be equally divided between the operation side and development side of the expenditure. So with me to discuss the state budget is Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajiv Vishakaran, back for his monthly show.
Hi,
Rajiv,
everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
So I guess it's a smaller budget compared to 2018. And the theme this year is enhancing the economy, empowering the people, and prospering the state's well-being. Every year, the theme just gets longer and longer. What are the highlights this year, you know, for the budget, state budget?
Wow, I think that there's a lot of highlights. It was quite a long budget speech, well over 2 hours. There's a lot of things from developing the state's economy, making the benefits or the incentives from the states more efficient, growing the state. In fact, despite the budget size dropping compared to last year, it is still a relatively big budget. Now, if you compare it with 2-3 years ago, we are still on track in terms of revenue collection and spending, not just for operating expenditure, but for development expenditure. Selangor is one of the rare governments that allocates 50% of its budget for development. So that has done for the last few years, and that goes to show that it's our finances are still solid, and that we've got the operating expenditure under control, and we have a lot of room to choose developments that would be best suited for the state, and that will be very diverse because we have a very diverse state, from the rural parts to the extremely urban parts, from east to west. This is a very diverse state, and something is there for everyone.
This is the fifth successive year that the Menteri Besar is announcing a deficit budget, and of course this would eat into our reserves. Is this a sustainable trend?
Yes and no. While this is the fifth successive year that it's a deficit budget, it was only the last 2 years where the deficit was actually realized. Initially, while the budget was deficit, the revenue collection still exceeded expectations, and there was some savings in implementing projects. So in the end of the day, it wasn't a deficit. With this deficit of $360 million, it's a smaller deficit than the last 2 years. It's possible that we may break even by the end of 2019, or even if we run the full deficit of $360 million, it is still something we can afford based on the surplus that we have built up in the state coffers. So unlike, say, the federal government or some other state governments who have a lot of debt to service, Selangor government has a surplus in our bank accounts that gives us that flexibility. So this is still very much within our means. And our operating expenditure, because, you know, you can't willy-nilly reduce operating expenditure. That's your salaries and that's your other overheads, like your electricity bill and stuff like that. Our operating expenditure is under control, well below our revenue. So we do have the flexibility in the years to come to still sustain our operations and to choose what development priorities that we need to focus on year on year.
Our phone lines are open, and so if you have a question about the state budget, do call in 7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. So a lot of headlines focus on the free water program, or the fact that it will be slightly modified beginning Q2 next year. So the adjustment is that only low-income households will receive free water, albeit from 20 cubic meters to 25 cubic meters. So the Menteri Besar said that this is because cost of financing the program has increased because population has increased since it started. Do you agree with the Menteri Besar?
Well, it is true. We certainly have a lot more houses today than we did 10 years ago when we started the free water. And so the bill for financing free water has definitely increased over the last 10 years. But I personally support this move, and I'm going on air to say it. I've actually suggested in the State Assembly in the previous years that we should review this free water for basically the reason that once you go beyond the B40, the subsidy may not be felt by a lot of people. So B40 is around 4,000 ringgit and below, 3,900 something. So let's make it simple. So 4,000 ringgit and below. So those earning over 4,000 ringgit, a water bill of 10, 11 ringgit, maybe 7 ringgit, maybe 12 ringgit, it doesn't really put a dent in your monthly expenditure. So you may notice it. You probably will not notice it. It's definitely cheaper than most of the meals that you have. So it creates a small impact on your lives, but it creates a big impact on the state's expenditure. So this is something that I was always calling for the review, and I'm glad that this Menteri Besar is brave enough to take this bold step to roll back one of the freebies that we enjoy. But the freebie was not all that bad. It demonstrated something that all our critics said in 2008. It proved them wrong when they said that by giving free water, you'll drive the state to bankruptcy. But since 2008, we did not go bankrupt giving free water. In fact, we've demonstrated that despite the free water program, the state's surpluses grew and our reserves grew. And this is a testament to what good governance, open tenders, and fighting corruption can do to state government's accounts. So we have demonstrated what it can do, but I think now we need to move beyond that. And we need to do something maybe a bit more meaningful with the money. So one of the things that attracts me, and I think is probably not highlighted enough in the media ever since the budget speech was made last Friday, is the fact that the state government is allocating 223 million ringgit next year for water infrastructure. So these are infrastructure to improve the supply of water to our homes and our businesses. And I think that's very important. So we save 105 million ringgit by focusing the free water on the B40. And that's a lot of money. And this 105 million ringgit plus an additional 100 million ringgit is now being pumped into, for the coming year, into improving our water infrastructure. And something that was lacking in the last three decades has been changed in the last few years, that we are starting to put in a sizable amount of money every year into improving water infrastructure. And this, I feel, is far more critical. And to a lot of listeners out there who maybe feel the annoyance or irritation at the end of the free water program, I hope you can consider that. I think channeling the money towards improving the infrastructure will ensure a better supply in the long run. And I think that's something that is a bit more important to us than maybe saving that 11 ringgit and 40 cents that we've been enjoying for free.
You know, your Pakatan Harapan colleague, the Minister for Natural Resources, I believe, said that the tap water is clean enough to drink from the tap. And when you say improve water infrastructure, are you saying that what does it mean? You know, will you also agree that Selangor tap water is safe to drink?
Well, I think everyone out there already has their opinion whether it's safe to drink or not. But what I do know we need to improve on is we need to continuously develop new water treatment plants, because Selangor is a fast-growing state. The population is ever-growing, and it's probably the fastest-growing in the country. And so we need to continuously develop new water treatment plants to be able to channel the water. We need to invest in pipes. We need to invest in improving the water, treated water reservoirs that we have. And these are necessary to ensure that the water supply does not get interrupted and the water supply is good.
Mm. So you've defined the B40 group as below 4,000 at the household income level.
It wasn't me who defined, it was the statistics department who defined.
But I think what the Menteri Besar has said is that this will be administered through the IKASE platform using the state government program. And there are various definitions of who qualify for the B40. How would this be managed in terms of would the administrative cost of, you know, this house is eligible, that house is not eligible, would that be expensive to maintain?
Definitely, there'll be a little bit of administrative costs. And I think that's, you ask very important questions. I think those are questions that need to be answered by the either one of the EXCOs or the Menteri Besar. And in fact, a lot of us raise these implementation questions. But also, let's give the Selangor government a little bit of grace. This was just announced. The budget is being debated now by the state assemblymen. I've had my say yesterday, and a lot of other aduns are having their say. And then the budget needs to be agreed upon by the House. And once the state assembly approves the budget, then it's for the government to implement the budget for the coming year. So they've got a bit of time to figure out or announce the mechanisms. And I believe they will announce it when they are ready. So there has to be some sign-up process for sure. Right. And I would definitely be keeping an eye on this to make sure that there's as little red tape as possible in the getting the B40 to sign up. They just need to be some form of channel for them to easily sign up and let iSelangor know that I'm B40 and this is my proof of income and I should get that free water. So there will be a bit of cost to administrate this, but I think the bigger picture is that we're looking at a savings of 105 million ringgit from focusing the subsidies just to the B40.
All right. One last question on water before we go into the metro break. In September, the state government finally took over Splash
as
the final concessionaire that it bought over. Will this mean that water will be cheaper going forward after this restructuring exercise? Or is there at least a guarantee that it would not be more expensive?
The cost of procuring water. So iSelangor is the water company. It gets water from water treatment plants. And we have about 38 water treatment plants. And then it supplies water through about 30,000 kilometers of pipework throughout the state to all the homes. So we have over 2 million homes and businesses that get the water. So the cost of procuring water from two of those water treatment plants, the Sungai Selangor Dam Phase 1 and Phase 3, and this is a sizable amount of water that we consume because these are the two biggest water treatment plants, was very expensive. Was about three times the cost of water that was coming from iSelangor's own water treatment plants. So yes, we save a lot of money by taking back this concession and running the water treatment plants ourselves. We save two-thirds of the cost it costs from procuring water from there. So that savings definitely gets passed on to the people. But somewhere down the line, we need to take other bold decisions, necessary decisions to review the water tariff. Now, the water tariff as it stands today is exactly the same as it was in 2008 when we first took over the Selangor government. If we go by the original Shabas contract, the water tariff would have been reviewed in 2009, 2012, and 2015. And that review, that three increases would have resulted in the water tariff being double of what it is today. So I am very confident that the water tariff will not be double. It will be less than double, but it may have to go up because it's been 10 years. And I think in the last 10 years, if you sit and look back, a lot of the cost of doing business has gone up over the last 10 years. Salaries have gone up. Other operating equipment and whatnot have gone up. And so there may have to be an adjustment. And I think this adjustment may come either next year or the year after. There may be a small adjustment, and I definitely advocate for the adjustment to be very sensitive and be very targeted. But I wouldn't rule out adjustments to the tariff. I definitely will not go to as high as double as what would have happened if we didn't have a change of government in 2008, then the water tariff will be double today.
I'm speaking today to the Bukit Kasing State Assemblyman, Rajiv Rishikaran, about the Selangor State Budget of 2019. We'll come back and address affordable housing after this short break. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Anteka. With me in the studio today, Rajiv Rishikaran, the Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman, taking a break from his Assemblyman duties today to come and explain or talk about the Selangor State Budget 2019, which was tabled last Friday. You know, affordable housing is a big deal at the federal level, and it's also something that's being taken very seriously by the state government. And I guess I say we as Selangorians, the Selangor state government has chosen a different tack compared to the federal government in its solution or way to address affordable housing. And they are tying up with a local bank to, I guess, offer homes in a rent-to-own scheme. And $1 billion is being set aside by this bank. So tell me about this. Because the rent-to-own scheme has already been in the market for a while now. When did the Selangor State Government thought about taking this and incorporating it into its affordable housing policy?
Actually, yes, the rent-to-own scheme has been around for some time. And in fact, Selangor has its own rent-to-own scheme, the scheme Smart Saver, where a number of developments that would initiated by the state is available on the rent-to-own basis, where in our concept of rent-to-own, 30% of the rental gets put into a little piggy bank, and then that is made available after a certain number of years, maybe 3 years, five years should be the limit, for you to use as a deposit, your down payment towards buying a home. So that's one of the rent-to-own schemes. But this year, Selangor government has partnered with Maybank. Now, Maybank has launched its own rent-to-own scheme, I think, about a year ago. But that was mainly products in the middle to high end. Right now, a lot of the Rumah Selangor Ku, the affordable housing projects developed by the state government, is also made available through Maybank's rent-to-own scheme. So this is an added method option for those who are purchasing this Rumah Selangor Ku. They're still free to use conventional bank loans if they can afford the 10% down payment, and then they get a traditional 90% bank loan. That option is still very much on the table. There's also the option to get this Maybank rent-to-own scheme, where, as I understand it, it's only a 3 months rental down payment to start the contract, and it's monthly rental until you can afford to convert it into a loan. So that's two different options. I think the consumer has to decide, the buyer has to decide which way, which suits him or her more. But what's important is that we have started building homes in the last few years, and we are continuously launching more and more Rumah Selangor Ku projects. So these are not just policies on papers, there are actual projects on the ground. And one can go to the website of Lembaga Perumahan dan Hartanah Selangor, LPHS, and see the project. So if you looked at the website 6 months ago and you look at it now, you'll see some differences in the projects that are sold out, are taken off, and new projects come online. So it's ever-revolving. There's always products being introduced, options for buyers. So there's options in terms of houses. You get to choose where do you want to buy the house, subject to availability. You also get to choose financing methods.
Is this also targeted at the B40 group?
No, it's also for the middle class, for salaries up to 10,000 ringgit.
Yeah. So other than the Rumah Selangor Ku properties, what other properties will be made available for this scheme?
No, that is something you could ask Maybank, because that's something that they should answer. But for the Selangor State Government, our affordable housing scheme is Rumah Selangor Ku. We have, the last I checked, over 20 projects open for sale right now, and that's ever revolving. And that can you can purchase it either via conventional bank loan or through Now Rent to Own by Maybank. And hopefully other banks will come on board and offer other competitive solutions that can benefit the consumers. But our Rumah Selangor Ku is 250,000 ringgit and below. So it should be truly affordable for the middle class. And for the type A is at 42,000, type B is at 100,000 ringgit. And so this is really geared at the B40. And these prices are very accessible to them.
Right. Do we know how much that translates to in terms of monthly rent?
I don't have figures on of hand, but if you talk about the scheme Smart Saver, that's between 450 to 650 rental. But for the Maybank's rent to own, as I understand it, it's based on what the installment would have been. So your rental rate is equivalent to what your installment would have been if it was a conventional loan for that sum.
Okay. One of the things that you raise you had hoped the budget would raise address was the parcel rent rate. And there was a difference in how they are calculating how much an owner would pay for a parcel. Tell me why this was the switch was made for strata buildings.
All right. So in this budget, the Menteri Besar announced that there will be this the quit rent cukai tanah for strata buildings. So these are basically the apartments, condominiums, service apartments, flats, would be charged on a parcel basis rather than on the master title. So previously, the quit rent was charged on the master title. So maybe there was a huge sum, like 50,000 ringgit. It would be divided by all the units and they would pay their fair share. So that had some problems in implementation because when in certain condos, things run well, you know. Most people pay up and the condo management is able to settle the quit rent with the government. But in medium cost and low cost apartments, in apartments that have a lot of vacancy, your management has a challenge in collecting this quit rent. So when, say, 50, 60% of the people pay their quit rent and 40, 50% of the people don't pay their quit rent, the management does not have enough cash to actually pay that quit rent to the land office. And when that is not done, the state loses out on revenue and the apartment is in arrears. And so those people who paid the quit rent will not see it reflected because as far as the records show between the management and the state, the whole apartment did not pay the quit rent. So everyone suffers a consequence. But right now, what we're doing is we are charging by parcel. That means each person pays the quit rent based on their unit alone. So you take responsibility for your portion of the quit rent and you don't have to take responsibility for your neighbor's payment or lack of payment for the quit rent. So this was something that I called for about 3 years ago. I'm very glad to see that it's being implemented. The reason why I raised this matter yesterday in the State Assembly is because the implementation could have been done a little better, and I'm calling for it to be further improved in terms of the rate that is being charged. Should be, in my opinion, lower because we cannot use the same rate that was charged on the master title as the same rate that's been charged on the parcel. Because let's say you've got 100,000 square feet of land, and so the rate of 3 ringgit 30 cents per square meter on the land should be lower when it's charged on the building square footage, because the building square footage is a lot more than the land square footage. So in order to achieve an equal outcome for the apartment dweller, we need to have a lower rate per square feet for the building rather than the one that we used to charge on the land. So that was something that I explained in the State Assembly. I've also had a follow-up conversation with the Menteri Besar over lunch yesterday, and he's taken it positively, and I believe that there would be some action on this. So I voice this out to get a fair deal between landed property owners and those who live in high rises.
Yeah, this change was implemented in June, isn't it? So for at least this year, the rate for someone living in a strata apartment would be higher. Yeah, quit rent would be
the first bill was higher, and that's how we got to know about this problem. But that can be adjusted. Yeah. Credit can be given back when the rate is reduced.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that isn't the biggest issue. I think the biggest issue is to study back what should be the rate that will be charged, since you're counting the quit rent based on your built-up floor area now instead of your land size, and because there's a lot more concrete built-up area than land size. So it should be a lower rate. Should it be one-third? Should it be half? Should it be 70%? I think that's something that needs to be calculated, data-driven. For sure, to find that balance, so people pay more or less the same amount of cukai tanah as they did before, not drastically less. That will hurt the coffers of the state government, and not drastically more. That would be unfair on them.
Okay. So let's look at some of the policies that were introduced last year, and you tell me whether or not it's been continued this year.
Okay.
I mean, two that caught my eye was the that was newly introduced this year was the one for esports development, and there was also land that was set aside to build a racetrack, and that was purportedly to encourage motorsports. Are these like initiatives, or rather areas that the state government are looking to go into in a serious way, or is it something to try? Is it a pilot kind of experiment?
I think it's somewhere in the middle. We know we don't have the financial ability to do everything, but we also are a state that continuously provides recreation. So the conventional recreation that you see everywhere is badminton courts, football field, futsal courts, basketball courts. I mean, government has been building that since decades ago. And I think today we are sensitive to the fact that recreation comes in many forms, and these are some other alternative forms of recreations out there. But in the bigger picture, no pun intended, that the quantity of football fields, futsal courts, basketball courts, badminton halls in the state still outnumbers this esports and this racetrack. So, but you know, it's giving a bit of variety. And I think as we develop as a society and as we developed economically, we would, people, especially the younger generation, would appreciate some variety and some options.
But badminton court and football fields, those are funded by local governments, isn't it?
It's both. It's both. A lot of local governments get their funding from the state government.
So it's
both.
TVET was a priority last year. Is it still a priority this year?
It wasn't mentioned, but to my knowledge, it's not been it's not been affected. We have not rolled back or ramped up. But I think now that we have, the landscape has changed. There's quite a limited amount that the government can do as a state government, because education is constitutionally the purview of the federal government. The federal government is making big steps in TVET. Nurul Izzah has been appointed the coordinator to look at all aspects of revamping TVET, and it is being taken seriously. But I think now that we have a change in the federal government, it's time to hand the ball over to the federal government to carry this running, because they have the full scope of legislation under the law to implement any changes and improvements to this.
The education ministry is a huge one, and the minister seems to have a lot on his plate. Is this devolvement of power or authority to let each state manage their education something that now that, you know, both the state and federal is in Pakatan hand, is it something that you would push for?
It is something I've always supported. Many people also support devolving power, but it's something that we need to look in holistically. Devolving of power and responsibility also comes with devolving of resources. And so rejigging how taxes are collected and distributed is very, very important. So it's only been 6 months that we have had a change of government in Putrajaya. There's been a lot of more urgent things that have to be dealt with that ministers are working on. But somewhere down the line, we need to deal with this question. It is a very important question. We should devolve more to local authorities and state governments. And education is one of the areas which I personally feel should we should devolve some. Maybe the curriculum can be set at the federal level, but the implementation, the running of schools and community colleges could be done locally. But that also has to come hand in hand with devolving the resources.
Mm-hmm. How much is waste management under the purview of the state government? Because you have mentioned in the past, in the press as well, that you are disagreeable to having an incinerator built.
I have concerns with the waste, with the incinerator. Yes, Lango is looking at a waste to energy plan. So I do personally have concerns. So the concerns are two. Number one is on the environmental factor, but I think technology has shown and demonstrated that it can be done properly if government regulates it properly and controls emissions and controls how it's operated, we can deal with environmental concerns. The second concern is a much harder concern to deal with, is the financial part, because an incinerator is far more expensive to operate than a landfill. And so I would urge more discussion from the state government as to how are we going to pay for this incinerator's operation before we go ahead and start building it. So it's not to say it will never happen. I think as we progress as a state, somewhere down the line, we have to look at this. We can't rely on landfills forever and ever. But in the immediate short term, we must be very conscious of the fact that it costs money. And how we're going to deal with that cost, and how we're going to pass through that cost to the consumer, or how we're going to absorb that cost. And I think these questions need to be answered by the state government, the EXCO or the Menteri Besar, before we plunge into it. So it is back on the table after many years, but it is something that we have to tread carefully.
There is a WhatsApp message from Stephen asking whether there are any plans to have Selangor Own Uni be solely, or rather only enroll Selangorians.
Well, there isn't plans for this. I don't think that's in our best interest anyway, to limit any one university to only people from a certain geographical area. I think there's benefit in diversity. I welcome more universities to Selangor. I think we have probably the highest amount of universities in the country. But having students from all over the country, I think, benefits our interaction and learning processes. And so, no, there isn't a plan for a uni that only enrolls Selangor students.
Our healthcare scheme was one that was promised in the federal manifesto that it will be implemented nationwide. Would this scheme Peduli Sehat be extended this year?
The Peduli Sehat carries on. Menteri Besar mentioned in his speech. So the Peduli Sehat in Selangor goes on.
Smart buses.
But just for the listeners who are not aware, the Peduli Sehat scheme is a scheme that gives you a medical card that you can use at GPs. So it deals with primary healthcare. It makes primary healthcare more accessible to the groups earning. It's targeted at families earning 3,000 ringgit or less, or individuals earning 1,500 ringgit or less. So it makes private clinics become an option for them, as well as government clinics that already exist. So a lot of people live far away from government clinics and either have to spend a lot of taxi money to get there, or spend a lot of money getting healthcare at a private GP. So this was to deal with primary healthcare. But secondary healthcare, the plan has always been for those who can't afford private to go to government hospitals. Mm. So because just to clarify what Peduli Sehat is, and it remains.
Smart buses, are there allocations being set aside to continue to fund the last mile connectivity?
Yes, the smart buses also carry on. We retain this, and we also look forward to further initiatives from the federal government. And in fact, I think the initiative to give that 100 ringgit bus pass by the federal government is an extremely timely one to make public transport affordable. Now, that would definitely go a long way to encouraging people to consider not buying the next car, but to take public transport instead. Not just bus, MRT and LRT as well.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned at the start that Selangor is a very diverse state in terms of demographics and in terms of income level. Okay. And like you mentioned, the water policy does not affect every Selangorians equally. And same with the smart bus policy as well. It does not hit everyone in the same manner. Would you say philosophically, or the ideological drive of this budget, is it more focused on the B40 group, like what the national budget was? Because I think you mentioned, I ask you every year that we've done this show that whether your constituents in Bukit Gasing, whether they see benefits from the Selangor state budget and whether it affects them.
You assume they're no poor in Bukit Gasing.
I ask you every year. I didn't say that they don't get any allocation.
I mean, the B40, there are specific programs for the B40. I think that's what sometimes jumps up, you know, especially with your middle class listener. When you look at budgets, thing that jumps up at you is the Peduli Sihat scheme that benefits the B40, that helps them. But you know, if you look at it from the other perspective, government spends a lot of money on things such as roads, which benefit the middle class far more than it benefits the poor. So we can go into a huge ideological debate maybe in another show on that, but if one was to look at 100% of the budget, a lot of the things, developing the aerospace industry, developing new roads, bridges, highways, developing universities and whatnot, a lot of these things are used by the middle class. Or in fact, a lot of these things are used disproportionately by the middle class compared to the B40. So they are enjoying a lot of this expenditure by the government. And I think sometimes it is not spelled out enough in budget speeches, or sometimes it is not picked up enough by the media, and it's not put into that perspective for us to realise. But it is a 2.56 billion ringgit budget, and a lot of it is enjoyed by the middle class.
I think two more categories that we like to I like to ask you is the KISS program, the
Kasih Ibu Smart Selangor.
Correct, from mothers. These are 200 ringgit cash transfers that are given to mothers.
Okay.
Will this be continued?
Yes, but not only will it be continued, we're going to expand one aspect of it, which is a program, Work From Home. So there's going to be an effort put in next year, aimed at these recipients of KISS this year and next year, to get them on board these Work From Home schemes in attempt to empower them to raise their monthly income. Now, it may not fit everyone, but I think it will definitely fit a lot of the recipients. And I think that empowerment is as crucial as giving the basic help. So the KISS program ensured that in Selangor, every family had enough money to buy food, because it was a smart, it was 200 ringgit given a month, but it wasn't given in cash. It was given to the mother, not the father, and it was given in the form of a smart card. So the father could not go and buy cigarettes and alcohol with it, but the mother could go and buy food with it. And when the mother used this card at any of the participating outlets, they could buy food, they could not buy cigarettes, or they could not buy alcohol. So this ensured that families could acquire the basic amount of food, and that no family goes hungry. I think that's incredibly important in society, that we look out for the least fortunate among us to cover the basics. So that's our social safety net. But now we need to look at doing something a bit better, which is to also empower them to improve their income so that they enjoy a better quality of life. And so that's going to be something that I'm fully supportive. I'm glad that the state government is going to go down that road next year. And I hope at least half the recipients of KISS will see a significant jump in income. Even if that means that they cross the bracket and they don't get the 200 ringgit a month anymore, but if they're earning 2,000 ringgit more every month, I think that's a huge achievement.
Yeah, that was the question from last year as well, when it was proposed whether implementations would be a challenge. Take-up rate and execution is going well?
I would say for KISS, it's reasonably well done in terms of signing up people. The word spreads for things like this and people sign up.
Right, yeah.
It's not that difficult to implement, actually.
You know, the thing in the preamble or introduction to the Menteri Besar's budget speech was that this is a budget that is moving away from welfare towards empowerment. Mm-hmm. What are, you know, What are some of these drives, or what are some of these pillars that he'll be focusing on going?
I think what we talked about in the KISS program is an example. We also have another program called Zero to Hero, where we not only give microcredit loans to aspiring
entrepreneurs,
but we also give them the training. So you go through a training, be it a few days or a couple of weeks, in one of the, we got, I think, about 15 different types of businesses. And after the training period, when you are equipped skill-wise to run the business, you get the microcredit loan to acquire the equipment and to set up and to start the business. So when you start off with absolutely nothing, no skill, no money, you can actually get a working small business and that can generate money for you, and then you start paying back that microcredit loan. And I think this is something that you don't see very often, not just in Malaysia, but anywhere in the world. But we've been running this for a bit more than a year, and we're going to continue running this in 2019. And I think these are the things that can tremendously change a family in Selangor.
Yeah. Speaking about families, I was a little bit sad to hear that the incentives for newlyweds and newborns have been discontinued. Any comments on that before we wrap up?
Yes. So this new MB has proposed that we change the incentive per kahwinan belia, that 500 ringgit that we give to newlyweds, and put that amount of money that we spend every year giving this marriage gift into a program that deals with marriage counselling and things that revolve around that. And I think this is an attempt to deal with the high divorce rate that we have in Selangor. And I think this is a different perspective of using that same amount of money. And I think that's something that could be quite interesting. So various programs will be coming your way next year. We don't have details yet of the specifics of these programs, but basically that pool of money is being repurposed rather than just giving a handout to those that just got married, but to try to do things to help couples stay married happily.
That was Rajiv Vishakaran, Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman. We've been discussing the Selangor Budget 2019. Rajiv, thanks again for doing
My
this.
My pleasure.
So, as usual, if you have any suggestion or topics you'd like Rajiv to address in the following months for his following shows, you can find us on Facebook. Just put the Bigger Picture on the search bar, or you can write us at biggerpicture@bfm.my, or tweet us. Our WhatsApp channels would be open as well. And thank you for listening. This has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.